Hello and welcome to Wise Women, The Vicar and the Witch. I'm Maggie Whitehouse and I'm the Vicar.
And I'm Susie Crockford and I'm the Witch. We are perceived, perhaps, as being on opposite ends of a spectrum, but we're friends and we see the common threads of our different experience of the sacred. So please join us as we discuss
life, the universe and everything.
Are you sitting comfortably? Then we'll begin. Do you remember that?
Absolutely.
Children's...
Listen with mother.
Listen with mother, yes, that's right.
No, I don't remember it, but everyone in my life always said it.
Yes! Over to you, my dear. You've got a subject for us today.
Okay, I have a question burning on my lips, and I'm so happy that today is the day we're meeting to ask one another questions, because last night I was, not posed a question exactly, but given a piece of information which is bizarre because it spreads out in all kinds of directions in me and speaks to other questions. So what happened was that a friend got terribly excited and said, have you heard, do you know, about the wife of Yahweh, who seems to be being kind of excavated from hidden, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, no, how intriguing. And she said, yes, her name is Athera or Atherat or Atherath. I can't quite remember. And first of all, I thought, ooh, how intriguing. And then there's this whole second layer in me about names that begin with A. But let's begin with first, tell me, Maggie, about Athera. Is she a thing?
She's definitely a thing, but to be arrogantly fair, I think the story about her is totally distorted because it's always come along and she's the wife of God.
Hmm.
And we have this patriarchal idea that the wife of God is the wife of God, not God.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Atarat or Atherat or Ashrat or Asherah or Ishtar and all these are versions of the mother and the warrior goddess of Hathor, all from the Middle East. All the different faiths had the same overarching creative mother god.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea, and this went through to the Jewish temple, was that the feminine was the creatrix who gave birth to the sun, who then married the feminine and gave birth to another son and married the feminine. So it's actually a female-led trinity.
Mm-hmm.
And I really like that. And it comes back to the idea, when I first started training ordination in the independent Catholic Church, I couldn't handle the Hail Mary. Holy Mary, Mother of God. You know, I don't want to call Jesus God. Jesus is a human personification of Christ, which is part of the Trinity for me, though that's a little bit more complex than most people want to get into, I understand. But these terminologies are important. But I think it's vital that we understand that there was an attempt to return to the honouring of the divine feminine in the Jesus story.
Mm-hmm.
Because Catholicism, although it went very wrong because it became Roman, and every faith goes wrong because it gets caught into the system and the power, every single one.
Yeah, it becomes doctrine.
Yeah, but there was a clear intention until Imperial Rome picked up not to genderise, I don't know if that's, you know, not to make certain things more important than the other. And St. Paul did say it quite clearly, there is neither male nor female, nor freedman nor slave in Christ Jesus. And it's Christ Jesus, which means in the Christ as represented by this one human. And so many Christians just miss that because they think that Christ is Jesus's surname. And it isn't.
Right. Okay. Sorry. You know,
no, it's a wonderful, it's a lovely chuckle. I got that one from Richard Rohr and I love it. You know, Christ is not his surname, for God's sake.
Yeah.
It's a status. It's a level of consciousness that this man was able to achieve. And he told us to follow him, to reach that level of consciousness. And that level of consciousness does not see the male as superior or the female as superior.
Mm.
And it's the dance, it's the weave of life. And in the Old Testament, in the wisdom books, because we've got Torah, prophets and wisdom books. And the wisdom books include Proverbs, which is one of the ancient E-texts. Remember, we've got the Elohim text and the Yahweh text. The Yahweh ones and the masculine ones written later.
Mm-hmm.
And
Elohim, just to reiterate, being a female verb meaning the divine.
Yes. Well, it's a plural, actually. It's goddesses,
right?
Really. And of course, I've just lost my train of thought, but hopefully that was reasonable information anyway. But
okay, can I butt in?
Yes,
please do. You lost your train of thought with how much I love the way you expressed the feminine trinity as she gives birth to he, and they create a son who mates with she again.
Yes.
And that for me, the way you spoke of that spoke of a continuous lineage of the divine feminine,
mm-hmm.
weaving through this constant birth of the sun, which on a metaphorical level that's almost, I probably can't even put it into words, but speaks to the continuous lineage of the divine in a way that I find really beautiful.
Yes.
And that's what a woman's body, if we're going to speak in massive archetypes, and I don't mean that we're not speaking gender issues
no,
here.
No.
Dear listener, we're speaking massive archetypal
yeah.
issues. That, therefore, in that, the implicit lineage of divinity within the body of all that is, of which we are a part, is so present in that description.
Mm.
You can see the weave, the warp and the weft of reality embroidered with the divine. It's really beautiful.
Thank you. And you've reminded me as well with the word weave, because in Proverbs, one of the wisdom texts, that's right, it's all about Sophia.
Wisdom.
Which is wisdom, and it's feminine. The word Chochmah is feminine. And even on the tree of life, that side of the tree on which Chochmah is placed is generally referred to as the masculine side, the active giving side, whereas the other side is the feminine receiving side.
Mm-hmm.
But in fact, each one of the Sephirot, the spheres in which the divine light flowed in creation according to this tradition, it has to receive first
mm-hmm.
and then pass on.
Yeah.
So Chochmah is a perfect expression of that, which is that the feminine receives, nurtures, grows, gives birth to another creature, which then in its own turn must receive and then give. So the pattern is always to receive, give, receive, give. But you also have to fill yourself up and not give from an empty bucket.
Yes, I was about to go exactly
yeah.
to there, only
yeah,
mine
that's...
was going to be a cup. But...
Well, quite. My cup overfloweth. That's
yeah.
23rd Psalm. It's all there. You know, you fill yourself so that you can be exactly what the other wants to be. So you can shine that light. You know, I've got a full cup. I have extra for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that just weaves back round so completely to our conversation. Well, the repeated conversation, actually, that has literally, like some kind of beautiful honeysuckle tendril, repeatedly woven itself into our conversations, because we keep coming back around to the utter, utter crucialness. Importance is just not a big enough word. Essentialness of rest and of
yes.
the rest part of restoration.
Yes.
And how we must nourish ourselves, our land, all that is. How we must receive
yes.
from she who gives so much in order to be able to give back.
Yes.
And that beautiful balance is so lost. And yeah, the other thing I quickly wanted to say was, oh dear, we've just got to start using active and receptive instead of masculine.
We have, yes.
Because I think our meaning is in dire danger of being lost.
Yes, I think you're absolutely right. And I'm working on this exact thing at the moment. It's the summer recess for the Kabbalah group. But I'm just saying to them, we have to re-language
yes.
so much, because we misunderstand each other so easily nowadays.
Yeah.
Yeah, yes,
yeah.
active and receptive, yes.
Yeah. Yeah, just to wiggle back round to rest. I think I've made a discovery since
Ooh.
Last time, which is, knowing the way it's been going for me, it's possible that I made the same discovery last time. I've already said this.
Layers of the onion, dear,
layers
of the onion.
Layers of the onion, it's tragic. But, is that actually, it's not what you do, it's not the word you do.
It's the way that you do it.
Definitely, it is not what you do, it's the way that you do it.
Yeah.
And that I had this, well, I mean, to me, hilarious, but also, I mean, just such a lesson of, I decided I really, 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 really wanted our bedroom to be redecorated. So have I already told you this?
You have, actually,
yeah.
Yes, but...
And so I went hammer and tongs at it and, of course, completely exhausted myself. And then I did something similar with sewing some things. And I realised in the middle of my sewing, hand sewing is a thing that I love.
Uh-huh.
I find profoundly relaxing. But if you focus on getting it done, yes, it ceases to be relaxing and becomes just another stressful thing and a thing on the to-do list.
Yes.
And that was such a... I felt like, of course I know this. And if someone had said it to me, I'd have gone, you know, yeah, that's obvious. But actually embodied in me, on some really quite profound level, I just hadn't got it.
Yes. No, that resonates perfectly. Yes. Yeah. Yes. If you're doing it to get it done, there's no presence in it, is there?
No, there's no presence, there's no rest, because you're focused on the outcome, mm-hmm, rather than the doing.
Yeah.
And there's this sort of race to the finish, if you like. And so, of course, it's not a restful, lovely thing to do. Whereas if you're doing it almost for its own sake, because it's beautiful, because you're creating beauty, and the act of creating beauty is in itself supremely beautiful, then it's rest.
Yeah.
Ah, might have finally got it.
Oh, that's lovely. And it reminds me of all the times that I, and I'm sure many of the people listening, have been somewhere beautiful and spent the whole time taking photographs.
Yes.
Which is not being there, is it?
No. I've had some really strong teachings from the land hereabouts on that, in that I now choose regularly to go out without the capacity to take photographs, so I do not take my phone with me. And it will be on those walks that I'm close enough to a deer to, you know, see its eyeballs and could have taken the most perfect shot.
Yeah.
Where the buzzard will be, instead of 100 foot in the air, it will be 20 foot above me, where the owl will be sitting, you know, just in that tree just there. I have so many profoundly beautiful encounters when I don't have my phone.
Yes.
And I know that that's because the quality of my presence is completely different, because I'm not looking for a lovely image to accompany something that I want to say, or, you know, just a lovely image to share, because lovely images are clearly, it's more beauty that can nourish those who don't have access to it. I feel that very, very strongly.
Yes. The only time I've been to Israel, I chose not to take a camera. And I do regret that I don't have lovely pictures of the trip, but that was the trip on which I was given the inspiration for the Book of Deborah. Would I have got that if I'd been standing there with a camera? No.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, it's a really good practice.
It is. I mean, I do like to take the phone with me when I walk on the moor in case of loss or accidents or something, but I'd switch it off if I can. Apart from anything else, my friend John down the road has shown me so conclusively through kinesiology how even carrying a mobile phone drops your energy.
Really?
Yes. He'll do a kinesiology check on you, you know, with the pushing of the arm or the pulling of the arm, and lift up your energy for you to do it to show you how strong you are. And then he'll say, pick up your mobile phone, and you can push your arm right down immediately. And I've used that as a sort of parlour trick at workshops, in business workshops sometimes. And it hasn't worked 100% of the time, because there's always one who's going to say, I'm bloody well not going to do that.
And well, maybe. It might not be cussedness. It might be that different people's energy are affected differently by...
Yeah, absolutely. But if 99% of us are affected by mobile phones, it's another... There's nothing we can do, of course, because the rays are going through the air. And it's these Lucific truths, these people talking about 5G killing birds and things like that. It's not really a good idea to have all this stuff flowing through us, but we find it convenient.
I know, it's such a weird one, isn't it?
And I'm having this with my mother's plastic. Oh, because I mentioned before, we've cleared my mum's house. We've got so much stuff which we have to use. Oh, God, it's so convenient.
Really?
It's so convenient. I'm loving it and hating it simultaneously. Well, not hating it, but I'm sort of going, well, now it's helping me really to understand more how difficult it is to get rid of plastic, because I'd done a fair amount of that and was quite happily living without it. But when it comes to, you've got a little thing you can clip on a plastic bag that seals it and bung it in the freezer, instead of having to go and look for the right size box.
Right. Oh, dear. No. Well, you'll never persuade me, but I'm actually also really glad that you're finding a use for it, because the worst thing, I guess, would be that it had all been created and then it just got sent straight to landfill without ever being used on the way. Although, if it's those kinds of plastic bags that you can stretch, then when you've finished with them and they're no good anymore because they've got a hole in or whatever, you can recycle those. And those, it's still dodgy as hell and no excuse for buying a new one, but at least they can be remade into something else.
Yeah, I don't think I'm ever going to have to buy a plastic bag again.
Doesn't sound like
it. Not that I ever would want, well, anyway, but still. And she's got newer Tupperware, so.
Yeah, that stuff will outlast us all.
It will.
So tell me about, let's go back to Asherad.
Asherat. It really doesn't matter. Yes, usually, yes.
Okay. If she is a goddess in her own right, I get why it would be easy, in the same way that it's easier to speak of masculine and feminine to some degree, especially to us because we're all biddies and that's the language we're used to. But pardoning your presence.
No, I'm an older biddy than you.
I understand that there's not necessarily at all any disrespect intended in calling her God's wife. Yahweh could as easily be Asherat's husband.
This is true, but it's presented as, oh, how exciting, God's got a wife, rather than, oh, how exciting, there's goddess.
Yes.
And I would just prefer it that way.
Yeah, me too. But so, are her origins in the Temple of Isis?
No. Asherat is, I'm not sure if it's Sumerian or Assyrian, but it's further north and over to the east.
Right.
I'm sure there are. The thing is, people will create their gods according to what's needed, and the same things are needed all over the world, or they will perceive their gods or personify their gods. This is what's so difficult, because the only evidence we have from those days is stone carvings, and most of them are broken, so they're not complete. They're not like the Egyptian tombs where there's whole stories written. This is all stuff that was outside or has been destroyed, so it's very hard to piece together all this stuff. And people like Dr. Margaret Barker, whom I adore, this controversial Methodist scholar who's written all about the First Temple, she's putting together pieces of the jigsaw in ways that they suit me. But I have to be honest and say, there are plenty of scholars who say, no, she's pulling too much together. But I've met this woman and I know that the heart of her is about bringing ecology into Christianity. And she says you cannot do that without the goddess, because all along goddess is Mother Nature. You can't love the earth without honouring the goddess. And to hear a fairly orthodox Christian scholar say that, to me is, we're moving at last.
Yeah, she gets my vote for sure.
Yeah, we're moving at last.
Great. So it does, okay, so my other thing with her being Asherat is that I have got this long-standing thing of listening to water. I've been listening to and speaking with water for, well, as long as I can remember, really. And sometimes it seems pertinent, and sometimes it really doesn't, interestingly, to ask what I should call her. And in various locations, I have been given different names. If, for example, I go to the river at the bottom of the valley, just behind me, then the river is the Bovey, and she has been named the Bovey. She's currently the Bovey.
Yes.
Historically, she was the Bovi. That's clearly been her name for thousands of years. And so I guess, I mean, the truth is I've never thought to inquire if she would like to be called anything else. But some of the tributaries around here, and, you know, water in other places, I have ended up having a conversation of what would you like to be called? And in every case, the name I am given begins with the sound A. Now, as somebody who, in a kind of deeply oversimplistic version of events, equates all things Roman with the patriarchy, I am unwilling to name water Aqua. Which is why, when we last spoke, I was on about moon juice rather than, I don't know why I didn't call it moon water, feeling whimsical.
Thought moon juice was lovely.
A friend and a listener, bless her, commented, kind of, that made me squirm, moon juice. That was like a yucky name for something so beautiful to her. And she was suggesting something like Aqua Selene or whatever. Mm. And I felt in myself this kind of massive wave of resistance to the word aqua, but then realised, but hold on, aqua does actually start with the sound ah that you're always getting for water.
Yes.
And in Devon, the old word for river is Avon. Begins with an A.
Of course, yes.
And...
oh, this is fascinating.
It is, isn't it?
Yeah.
I don't know the etymology of the word water. And I wonder if it's, like we call it, an orange. It actually used to be a norange. I'm wondering if we got the W in auto from from somewhere else. I don't know. And perhaps it's auto or atta, really.
Atta. Oh, now that is interesting. We should have a look. We should have a look.
It'd be fascinating.
Yeah. But not right now. Well, yes, that's interesting. Well, Italian, Spanish, French, I think they all have aqua, don't they?
Aqua, agua.
Agua, yes.
L'eau, actually, in French.
That's true, of course. Silly, isn't it? Yes. Yeah. But it's still A. Well, all I can throw into that is it's alpha and omega. It's the beginner. The water is
the source.
The source of life.
Yeah.
I don't know. All I do know is that the Bible starts with a B because they didn't want to be arrogant and start it with A because that's what God did. belief that everything began with A.
Because that's our alphabet? Or does that predate? Sound predate the written word?
I think it predates. But it depends what you mean by the written word. I mean, the words in Hebrew for the four worlds of fire, air, earth and water are written, but they would have been written by very few people. They would have been spoken. And the top world is Atzilut, which is A.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really interesting,
isn't
it? Maybe we put A at the beginning of the alphabet because A was the sound.
Was the sound of the source.
The sound of the source, yes.
That's a chicken and egg question.
It is a chicken and egg question.
But I'm massively ignorant about all of this stuff. Alpha and Omega, they are the names of the first and last name of the alphabet, are they not?
Well, not in Hebrew, no. It's Greek, the Alpha and the Omega, means the beginning and the end. It's in the book of Revelation. But Omega actually is not just a letter, it's a word which means completion.
Right.
So the Alpha is the beginning and the Omega is the completion. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. Oh, it's very intriguing.
It is intriguing, and our lack of information about the word water. Do you want to pause while I look it up?
Go on, then.
And after a slightly lengthier pause than we were anticipating, where Susie went to her computer, you found out lots of things about water.
I did. So the word water has its... root in the proto kind of Germanic and what's the other proto-Indo-European source of basically its own self, so vata vod vet, etc., which is kind of what I thought. I might even at some point in the past have looked that up before. And intriguingly, I found that the first time, I'm sure it said the first time we find the word water written down is 450 years ago, but that seems impossible the more I think about it.
It does seem odd, doesn't it?
I must have misread that. Anyway, or maybe it used to be spelt differently or something. Mm. Perhaps it's that iteration as water.
Or maybe people didn't specify it as, or sort of generalise it as water. Maybe there was river, there was sea.
River, sea, lake, yeah.
Drinking water or something like that.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe.
I don't know. Let's go back to that.
But it didn't start with an A. Anyway, but it has got A in it with most of them.
It has got A in it with most of them. Mm. And so your suggestion, I also went to the Assyrian, which is Miat. But as we both noticed, that's got a strong A sound in it, even though it begins with a M.
Yes.
So I don't know. I don't think it leaves me any the wiser, still further intrigued.
That's interesting. Miat, because Tiamat was the first goddess, the one who was killed in the Babylonian legends, killed by the god, and the earth was made from her body.
Mm. Well, that's, you know, another pet thread of yes. mine is the idea that all of our rivers are goddesses.
Yes. Well, there's books by Bern Aaronvich called The Rivers of London, which is a sort of parallel dimension murder mystery series, but all the rivers have personas in London.
Oh, really?
And all the aspects of water have personas. Yes.
Oh, amazing. I think I was actually working at Penguin when that came out. Mm. I didn't read it.
And Miriam, which is the source name for Mary, mother of Jesus, Mariam or Miriam either means strong or bitter water. Because yam is the water aspect.
Oh, really? That's funny. I thought the more part of it was the water.
No, aspect. That's the strong or bitterness, more the A or the I.
It's endlessly fascinating.
It is endlessly, yes. Yeah. But it the water is... I mean, it was Miriam in the desert, Moses' sister, who gave wherever she went, there was water for the travellers. And it was only after she died that Moses had to start creating the water, you know, striking his stick on the ground, that sort of thing.
Wow, amazing. Yeah. What occurs to me as I hear us witter on, actually, is that whilst this is, of course, fascinating and interesting, and it would be so... Well, beyond intriguing, it would be amazing to know, in truth, what's the history, what's the origin and all the rest of it. But that actually, it so doesn't matter.
Yes, it doesn't matter.
What matters is what we make it mean now.
Yes. And I love the idea of naming them, because when I go out in the evenings in the dark, I know all the trees and the hedgerows want to be named. Mm. You know, just name us. And quite often it'll be Crooked Tree by the Gate or something that. Yeah. Or it may be the Ash... Or the third ash. They don't mind if they're the 27th ash, thank goodness. But they do love to be named, and that is the human theme. But I've never thought of naming the streams.
Yeah.
Well, actually. Yes, you don't impose.
Yeah, I'm not imposing. I'm not really naming. I'm inquiring into what is the correct manner of address,
yes.
I guess, which is a bit different.
Yes, that is different,
but
yes.
Also, I don't know. I used to very much be with you on the it's... an amazing, it's a very human thing to name everything, of course it is. But there is a bit of me now that thinks, well, actually, that thinks to call an ash is to kind of categorise it in a way that perhaps closes down the capacity for conversation. But to call it the Crooked Tree by the Gate is an entirely another thing.
Mm.
And that, again... My sense is, you know, I'm sure there are people out there sitting on their rocking chairs, gnashing their teeth, going, they are just encouraging people to be ignorant. But actually, our relationship, my personal relationship, your personal relationship with the Crooked Tree by the Gate is very significantly more important than whether or not that tree's an ash.
Yes.
And okay, you can't, I won't know whether it's an ash or not, until I go and see who is the Crooked Tree by the Gate. But you know far more about them because you know the Crooked Tree by the Gate than you would if it was just, oh, another ash.
Yes, and that's actually part of the difficulty when I feel this call, name us. I haven't got that many names.
But that's
Fred, Susie, that, Joe,
no,
Michael.
The beautiful thing of the praise poem, what Martin Shaw calls the praise poem, of the naming of things with an extravagance of beauty, you know, Crooked Tree by the Gate who holds the nest of the blackbird in her branches and whom I bless every time I pass, a type of thing. You know, the name doesn't have to be Ash or Susie.
No, but if there's 500 trees on the walk, I'm going to be running out of ecstasy.
You can be quite slow. Well, it really reminds you of of the blackbird song that I have. Which is,
yes,
it is a kind of a naming, but it's more than that. It's an acknowledging. It's not the naming part that's important, I think. It's the acknowledging.
Yes, I absolutely hear that, yes. Mm. I mean, I don't usually get a sense that they go, oh, disappointing walk tonight, Maggie. They, although maybe they do, I don't know. Quite often I'll come back to the house and I'll pick up a slight sadness. She wasn't there.
because you're in your head.
Because I was in my head, yes. Yeah.
So easily done.
Oh, God, tell me about it. Well, and on the drive here, I was thinking, my God, as soon as I get to yours, I've got to put bare feet on the ground. I'm not grounded here.
Mm.
Far too much in my head.
Mm. Just as a massive encouragement, I'd really like to encourage other people to have a practice like going for a walk and offering praise poems to those beings that you notice, whether you do it in word, by name, in song, however you do it. It is a beautiful act of relationship, and that is one of the easiest ways to get into the deep knowing of place. It's a way to go towards being claimed by place and becoming of place.
Yes.
When you are singing or naming or whatever you call it, that you look in a different way and you start to notice. And you notice who you know and you notice who you don't know. And then there's always the invitation to, you know, go and find, in my opinion, the best book ever, Roger Phillips' wildflower book or his mushroom book or his, you know, hedge plant book or anything, and find out, okay, what do we call that? What does it do?
Mm.
Who is this being? Both in terms of who does Roger Phillips say they are, but also who are they to me?
You know? Mm.
And sometimes you find, well, you often find people will get a feeling or be told, you know, oh, for example, it's a recurring theme at the moment for me, is people being told that they need plantain for whatever,
yes.
You know, for
yes.
a wound or something. And they'll look at me kind of quizzically and go, I don't think we have any of that. And then I'll go home and discover that their entire garden
is full.
Yeah, or the roadsides or whatever are rammed with plantain.
Yes.
And we don't notice these things.
No.
Until we look. And that thing of going along and naming and noticing, that's such a great thing to do.
We've never had self-heal in our garden, but last year I started picking a little bit and I made a salve. And I did, there was a pathway where there was some self-heal that had grown over a stone which was often flooded, and it was dry and it was dying, so I thought it might be all right to take that home. So I asked it and took it home and planted it. That plant didn't make it. The grass is now full of self-heal.
Yay!
Isn't that just lovely?
That's beautiful. That's like me and my Nicotiana. I bought Nicotiana either as seeds or as little plants repeatedly since we got here. I love it. The smell.
What's it like? I don't know it.
Tobacco plant.
Oh, right. Yeah. Yeah.
You know that, yeah?
Yeah.
And it's always kind of shriveled up and died. I think I either didn't water it enough or I put it in a bed that basically somehow gets too much sun for it. I don't know. It sounds unlikely, but I guess that bed is very dry. Anyway, this year I gave up. I didn't bother. I didn't buy any seeds. I didn't buy any little plants of Nicotiana. There is the most enormous, thriving, heavenly-scented, great thug of a Nicotiana in the flowerbed next to the flowerbed, the one that I always used to try and plant it in. I was like, okay, yeah, just let her have her way, you know.
Yes. Yes, and I think I've talked about mauve before, how my mother hated mauve, so I grew up thinking I had to hate mauve.
Oh.
And I'm only learning over the last 10 years that there's nothing wrong with mauve, just because my mother quite likes it now anyway, so that's
hilarious.
It is hilarious, because she's got this Gemini moon, so she'll change her mind, having sort of imprinted me with the previous belief, like, hang on, let me catch up here. But last year I was saying to the garden, we do need more, I'd love some more pretty ground cover stuff. Now, obviously, we're leaving in the autumn, so I didn't plant much this year. And this year, we've got vast amounts of purple, flaky flowered poppies.
Oh,
and they're
wow.
all mauve, actually. They're not actually purple, they're mauve. And they just suddenly, we had one plant last year, and I let it to seed, because I hope there might be three or four more. We've got about 100 now.
Oh, great.
Gorgeous.
Yes, I've rather naughtily got my eyes on some people's, well, actually, they're mostly verge side patches of stunning red poppies.
Mm, I love red poppies.
Yeah, I'm kind of hoping to slink along there in autumn and take a seed head or two.
Yes.
Scatter them about the place.
Oh, and they know how to grow, do poppies,
oh
boy.
Yeah, beautiful.
I think we're done for the day.
Okay, lovely to see you.
lovely to see you too. And it's got it. It doesn't get old, meeting, does it?
No, it doesn't. I don't think it'll ever get old.